He is Brian Anderson, BA. You know him and love him as the Pride of Geneva. And, of course, he is the color analyst for the Tampa Bay Rays. But better than that, it was for his days when he was a member of the Cleveland Indians bringing us glory at Old Jacobs Field. Hi, Brian. How are you?
What's up, BA?
I am good, boys. I'm at the gym right now, and I'm actually having to eject myself because it's the gym.
Uh-oh. Wait, you're breaking up just a little bit. You broke up. You're leaving the gym? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, getting out of the gym. It's one of those gyms that they prefer you not be on the phone when you're inside of the facility.
Kind of you to be polite. It's a good polite man right there.
Do they mind if you chug a beer while you're on the treadmill? Is that frowned upon in there too?
Well, it's Boston, so I think that anything kind of goes here, except for talking on the phone within the facility. That's it.
And it's Boston, so you might get punched if you talk about the phone in the facility, too.
Pack your car with the cellular. Get out of there. That's what they're saying, yeah. Brian Anderson.
Yeah.
You didn't play.
Yeah, that was, by the way, that was pretty good right there.
Thank you. Well, if you played for the Sox, then it probably would. Hey, that's Sox. That's Brian Anderson. Are you kidding? He can do whatever he wants. He can be on the phone.
True,
that's what they would
say. Yeah, I agree.
Unless you made a mistake.
Yeah,
and then they're
exactly.
Hey, that's Brian Anderson. The ball went between his legs, and the Yankees beat us. Get him out of here. Let's go beat the out of him. That's what we'll do.
Good save.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, BA. Listen, I just want to talk to you about the Guardians. It's this weird weekend. It's like limbo weekend. You've got Houston coming in. Odds are the Yankees are going to be the top seed in the American League. You're trying to figure things out. And, oh, by the way, you may play Houston in a week in the first round of the playoffs. Just kind of give me the vibe on what it's like to be a player where you're already in, you're pretty much settled on what's going on, you're kind of waiting to see who you're going to play, and then you've got playoffs next week.
Well, I mean, I think more than anything, it's just about getting your team ready. That's what Stephen Vogt is, I'm sure, and his staff is concentrating on, getting your pitching lined up. If it's kind of set in stone on where you're going to be, who you're going to face, when you're going to play, then, it's just about managing your squad, getting guys the work that they need, guys in the bullpen, make sure that they get a little bit of work, but that they're well-rested by the time that game one rolls around. And as a player, you're just trying to stay sharp. I mean, you're trying to end the regular season on a high note, obviously go into the postseason with a full head of steam. I think everybody that plays the game realizes that it's a tough switch to flip when the playoffs start. You want to be going in with some momentum. You want to be carrying in good vibes and having good at-bats and good innings on the mound as you go into the playoffs. It's not real easy to get into the playoffs and say, okay, let's crank it up now. So you want to go in with a full head of steam, and I'm sure that's what everybody's concentrating on this last weekend.
I don't think you've ever been in this position as a ball player, but if you were, man, what do you do if you're like on the Guardians pitching staff and you got a week off? Like, this pretty much what this is going to end up being is about a week once the season ends before you're playing once again. What are you doing to stay fresh?
Well, listen, that's what this weekend is all about. It's about getting the guys to work because that's hard. And it's really interesting in baseball. Baseball is a repetition sport, and it's something that you have to do day in and day out. That's why guys are out working, taking ground balls. Big leaguers who know how to field a ground ball are still out there taking ground balls every single day because it's a repetition sport, and you want to continue to train your body, train your mind, because when you get out on that field, there's not a whole lot of time to think. It's all about reacting. And so, when you get into these situations, I hate to say that it's almost a bonus to be a wild card team because you're playing right away than to have to sit and wait for, 5 or 6 days. I think that is definitely a disadvantage. And, I don't know how else you do it. Because if you're going to have the wild card and you're going to have a best of three, they have to play first. And even though you play them 3 days in a row, there's an off day, play them 3 days in a row, and then the next series is going to start. That's still the teams that get the byes. You're right. They're going to sit for 5 or 6 days. And that is, in my opinion, that's just far too long in the game of baseball. So you've got to get creative on how you try and stay sharp, and whether that be, inter-squad games, whatever you have to do, because it's not ideal. And the only time that I ever was a part of a team that did that in 2001, and we actually, ended up winning the World Series with Arizona, we knocked out the Braves in 5 games. And I think the Yankee series went maybe to the end. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure, but I know that we had at least 5 days off before we got you know, before we got to be able to play against them. So, you know, and there were intramural games, not intramural, but, you know, inter-squad games that you would do to try to stay sharp. But, yeah, it's not ideal.
All right, B.A., what's the difference between a start in the regular season and a start in the playoffs? And can you simulate any of that during the regular season?
Wait, say that again, a start?
A start in the playoffs compared to a start from a pitcher's perspective.
Well, it's the same. I mean, it's absolutely the same unless you make it out to be something that it's not. I mean, you're going to go through the same routine that you do in the regular season, whether it be the playoffs or not. You know, you have the start time, you have time that you know it takes you to get ready, and you just go out and do it. Now, the only thing that's different is a lot of times between the ears. Don't make it bigger than it is. I mean, while you can acknowledge that it is bigger because it is the playoffs and there's no tomorrow and, you know, a couple of bad games and your season can end, you cannot allow that to seep into your psyche about how you're going to perform. You just have to realize, and that was the wonderful thing that happened with me, with, you know, getting into game one of the ALCS in 1997, you know, getting into that game and the realization, you know, it's a big deal. You know, you're nervous, you know, you get yourself ready and you jog out there on the mound and you get the ball, you rub it up, you're looking for the first sign and you're like, hey, this is baseball. Hey, it's baseball. So let's go compete. That's what it's about, competing. And so that's what I did. And that for me clicked. And it was like, this is, yes, it's bigger. It's a bigger deal. No question about it. But you have to just keep it simplified. And that's why when I told you that story of Tony LaCava all those years before telling me not everybody can play in October, I had no idea what he meant until batting practice of game one of that series. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I get it now. Because it is much bigger, and the stage is bigger, the lights are brighter, and some guys, they do well in that kind of environment, and some guys really can't handle it. So really, it comes down to what's between the ears. Everything else is just a matter of routine.
The best friend of the show, Brian Anderson, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, former Indians pitcher, current Rays color analyst. Always a good time to talk to him. So, B.A., help me out with this one, too. Because we always talk about, and especially in the modern game, the idea of these starters being on such a short leash. Does that enter your head when you're pitching at all on the mound? Or is it just, boy, if that even decides to sink into that you think someone's behind you, you're toast?
Yes, that's exactly right. You cannot think of anything like that. You think, I have a job to do. I have to do it to the best of my ability. And you have to have complete tunnel vision. Complete tunnel vision. When your mind starts to wander and you're thinking about who's in the on-deck circle, you're thinking about who might be warming up, you're thinking about a pitch count, the game's hard enough when you are laser-focused. If your mind starts to wander, you are done. You, it is not going to go well for you. So none of that stuff seeps into your mind at all. You are worried about the next pitch, the next hitter. That's it. I mean, that's the way that you have to keep it. If things start to, you know, if the mind starts to, you know, spread out to other things, you're in a world of hurt.
No way in hell a manager would tell you before they're going to do that, right?
No. And you know what? That's what's funny with my start in game three of the World Series in 01. So, I had no idea, but I found out after the fact that they had put me on a pitch count because I had pitched out of the pen through the playoffs and I had some extended outings, you know, some three inning outings, but not like a full start. So unbeknownst to me, they had put a 75 to 85 pitch limit on me for that start. I ended up going, I think 107, 108. Because I obviously got to my number and I was still being effective and I wasn't losing any of my stuff. So I ended up going like a normal start, 107 pitches or so, I think, in that neighborhood. Anyway, point is, I found that out after the fact. They would never tell you that up front. Never in a million years would they tell you up front. They're just going to tell you, you go as hard and as long as you can. I'll let you know when you're done.
Hmm. The Guardians, I think, are in a unique spot here where I don't know. I mean, you would think Tanner Bibee is the guy they're going to throw out their first game. I keep looking at this rotation going, who do you want to throw game one? And like, if you were a manager and you were trying to set up the rotation, especially with the Guardians rotation, what goes through your mind to say, this is the perfect guy for like, it's easy when you have a clear-cut ace. I don't feel like the Guardians actually have that, like, oh my God, here we go. This is 100%. I think all the starters are pitching well, and they all could give you a start, or maybe perhaps you're in trouble. So I think when you're sitting there and you're the front office and you're the manager on a team, you're trying to figure out what's the perfect way to kind of set up your rotation, or does that not matter with the Guardians because their bullpen's so strong that if they need to pull the ripcord, they can do it pretty quick?
Yes, and they will. And yeah. I think that definitely is something that plays in their favor, especially if they're able to get one of the buys. In speaking with Tom Hamilton when we were in town, he was telling me that the way the schedule is set up for the teams that get the bye in the first round, they have a game, day off, game two, day off.
Correct.
And boy, does that benefit Cleveland and their bullpen, there's no doubt. But to go back to your original question, if you've got three or four guys that are pretty similar and you think, you know, hey, listen, I've got to pick one to be a game one starter, nobody's a real clear ace, it is very simple for me. Who can handle the moment? Period. That's it. Who can handle the moment? Game one. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. So who can handle it the best? That's my guy. Period.
You think that's a vet or you think that's a rook?
It could be either one. There are rookies that their demeanor and their poise is far beyond being a rookie. There are some veterans that may not be able to handle it. You have to know your players. You have to know what makes them tick. And again, you have to know who can handle the moment. It goes back to what we talked about before, about not everybody can play in October. You got to know what's on the inside, what's between the ears, what's in the chest, and intestinal fortitude. Mm. And really, that's what it comes down to. And if it's a rookie, so be it, because there are rookies that are very advanced in their poise, for sure.
B.A., who do you like? I mean, the Dodgers are easy, I think, on the National League side, but as we found out last year, it doesn't – like, you get to the playoffs, it doesn't matter how many wins you had during the regular season.
That's it, in a nutshell. I really don't have a favorite yet. I think Houston is always dangerous because they came charging. They were 7-19 and 10 games out. They were 10 games behind the Mariners in June. and they come all the way back and win that division going away. They're always dangerous because they have the pedigree, the cachet. These guys have been there and done that. However, having obviously played all of the teams and been around the league for the last 6 months. And we've talked about this before too. You keep hearing about this team. They're playing so well. They've won 9 out of 10, boom, ba, boom, ba, boom. And then you sit down and you watch a 3-game series with the Rays playing them. And you're like, okay, that's a decent team. That's not a world beating team, but, and I feel that that's true of everybody. So to your point, yes, just get in. The Arizona Diamondbacks showed you that last year. They were 84-78. They just got in and ran that all the way to the World Series. So, you know, I really think that it's that wide open. I think that even the really good teams, Dodgers, Astros, you know, Yankees, Cleveland, they all have flaws. They all have a potential fatal flaw. So it's just going to be who's able to put it all together and who's able to get really, really hot and maybe get some breaks along the way.
Brian Anderson joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. The Oakland Coliseum final home game last night. The A's are picking up and heading to Sacramento for the time being until they get a stadium built in Vegas. What do you think of the A's leaving Oakland, man?
It's sad. That whole situation was just so mismanaged from top to bottom. I guess. It's just sad. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, you think about Oakland. They had, you know, the Golden State Warriors in the arena that's right next to the Coliseum. They fled to San Francisco. You know, the Raiders obviously have run off to Vegas. The A's are running off to Vegas. It doesn't say too much, for the politics of Oakland. It's hard to get anything to move there. And I think that owner, I'm not sure of the entire story. I know that people are not real thrilled with him out there. But at the same time, to get anything built in California, period. I mean, you have an ant mound that you might not be able to move because, you know, so it the restrictions out there are ridiculous. And I don't think that he wanted to mess around with it. And so he ends up moving. But it kills the fan base out there in Oakland because it's a rabid fan base. you know, when they come out and fill that stadium up, they are as rowdy of a group as that you're ever going to find. I think we all saw that with the Oakland Raiders. I mean, that, you know, whatever they called the hole, the black hole, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
When the Raiders played out there. So it's a hearty bunch of fans, but it just, you know, it's unfortunate how that all turned out. And I'll tell you, the other interesting thing too is, you know, you've heard, or we've heard, you know, baseball is going to expand in a few years. And you know that Las Vegas is like a primo spot where Major League Baseball would probably prefer to have that be an expansion team where the expansion fees would be through the roof rather than an existing team to move there. You know what I mean? You know that their gold standard cities would be Vegas and Nashville, and the money that you could get from those two cities, and now one of them is taken completely out of the mix with them moving there. So it's I'll be interested to see if that does end up happening. What ends up happening with that? But it's going to be weird playing them in a minor league stadium. And by the way, that minor league stadium, that's going to be in use for the entire summer.
Right.
It's going to be Oakland's going to be at home, and when Oakland goes on the road, the AAA team is going to play there. So the upkeep on this field, I don't know how you do it. I mean, it's going to be it'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds.
All right, BA, we got to roll. Have a good weekend. Please stay safe, and everybody back down towards Tampa with just the bad weather going on down there. So please be safe, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Take it easy, dude.
Yes. Yeah, all right, boys. Take care.
Talk to you later. He is Brian Anderson, super friend of the show. We have him on every week. Let's come back. We'll talk a little bit about what he had to say. Also get back into the Browns. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Football teams in West Virginia. Basketball teams down. IMG Academy in Florida. I mean, that's how we roll these days. We're big time.
Yeah, I think we need to start doing training camp for the show.
Where are we going?
Puerto Vallarta, Mexico.
Yes.
Kidding me? We do training camp. We do it in February.
Yeah.
We go to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico.
You know
we
what
go
would
where it's
happen.
Warm.
Can we be really honest?
Sure.
Yeah, we would be up in Nunavut, Canada. That's where they would send us to. Yeah, it's February. Where are you going to? That semi-new province in Canada? Oh, that's great.
You know where they do the Iditarod? A little north.
Yeah. In fact, even the dogs don't want to go that far
exactly.
North. That's where you'll be doing your
even
spring training.
Even the dogs
training.
Are like, eh. Forget it. We're not doing this.
Brian Anderson said some pretty interesting stuff, especially about the playoffs going into this thing. And, you know, I got the same word going through my mind right now.
So I had an evil dark
like,
thought.
His resistance to maybe having some of these days off.
And B.A. also had the evil dark thought that a lot of people have yelled at me for. Here's what B.A. told us a little bit earlier.
You know, when you get into these situations, I hate to say that it's almost a bonus to be a wild card team because you're playing right away than to have to sit and wait for, you know, 5 or 6 days. I think that is definitely a disadvantage, and I don't know how else you do it, because if you're going to have the wild card and you're going to have a best of three, they have to play first. And even though you play them 3 days in a row, you know, there's an off day, play them 3 days in a row, and then the next series is going to start. That's still the teams that get the byes. You're right. They're going to sit for 5 or 6 days, and that is, in my opinion, that's just far too long.
It is weird. Like, you play 162, right? If you're in a weird spot where you have a day off and you have a rain out the next day, you may have 2 days off throughout the regular season. I mean, it doesn't happen very often. And now all of a sudden you're asking a team to stop doing what they're doing. Now, the one thing I love about baseball is that, you know, they play series all year long. It's not like the NBA, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, we'll play this team on Tuesday, we're playing that team on Thursday. And then, oh, by the way, when we get to the playoffs, you're going to play the same team in a best of seven. NHL, same thing, right? But when it comes to baseball, the essence of the game is to play in a series. And the key to success, any baseball team will say, go out and win series. Doesn't matter if you get beat 21-0 in the first game of the series. Come back and win the next 2-1-0. You won the series. That's what's important. So I think the mindset is set up for that just by the inherent nature of the game. But now you're put yourself in a spot that you are rewarded for being the first or the second best team in the American or National League, and you're going to have to wait almost a week before you play your first game. And so that gives, you know, I think from a baseball perspective, you have to wonder if that's good or bad.
So the All-Star break is 4 days. The
All-Star
break last year was 4 days.
Yeah, okay.
So No. I just, because I was wondering, I was like, okay, so how long is the All-Star break? Is this something, is it similar to that? So this break would be one day longer than the All-Star break.
All right. But even on the All-Star break, it's like, oh, I can go home. Right. A lot of guys go home during that.
Correct. They go home. There's a bit of a relaxation, but it's only 4 days on top of that. So even starters, you're still on your throwing programs. You're not getting away from all of that stuff. You're not just shutting it down, especially if you're the guy that's coming in and throwing the day that the season is roaring back. I've said I didn't want the bye. I kind of stand behind that. And we don't have enough information to truly make this case. But right now, so we've done this now for 2 years. We've had eight teams that have had the bye. Three out of the eight teams have won the series that's come out of it. Now, again, 2 years, eight teams. This is a really small sample size. So I don't think we could sit back here and say, yes, for sure, you don't want the bye. We don't have enough information to make that case. But it's just one of those things worth noting. I didn't want it. You got it. Hey, man, take it. You know, rest up the bullpen. Rest up the arms. Rest up anybody who's fighting any kind of injury. Hey, Stephen Kwan, like, I know you just came off the IL. Get your rhythm back a little bit. If you need that extra time, you got it. If anybody's nursing something, David Fry, shoulder injury, hey, maybe those 5 days do wonders for you. But I kind of didn't want it. And
can you stop doing that by gritting your, like, no one understands when you're gritting your teeth?
No, because it's like, because it's the thing you shouldn't say. You should go, what? I have being rewarded. Yay, reward. Like, that's how you should think of it, you know?
Who does it affect the most, though? Is it the pitchers? Is it because pitchers?
Think it's the hitters.
Yeah, I think it's more on that. And I don't think it changes your ability to field, because that to me is like riding a bicycle. Like, you know how to take a ground ball. I don't think a couple days off are going to stop you from getting a ground ball. Do you?
No.
Okay. No, so I mean, defensively, I don't think there's any issues with, especially when we're talking about guys at Major League Baseball level. That's not the case at all. But you're right. It's the timing of the hitter.
And you can't simulate a playoff game. Like, no matter how loud you turn up the speakers inside of the stadium, no matter all the things that you do, you can't simulate a playoff game. You know, a jugs machine can't simulate a pitcher. No matter how hard you try to do it. So that's the other side.
Get some robots out there, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the other side of this, too. So look, man, it is what it is, and you'll take it because you earned it. And you should be proud of yourself for the fact that you earned having a bye here. It just always made me wonder a little bit. Okay, is this the way you do this? Or should you be in the position that you want to just keep playing and staying in that rhythm, and especially if you're coming in on a hot streak?
The other thing you want to watch for coming into this weekend, too, is Emmanuel Clase. Because I was just reading MLB.com. And they were talking about, you know, some of the things to watch for this weekend, some of the top things at stake. And, you know, Clase is one of them. And it's just, think about the numbers. Clase has a 0.61 ERA. That, to me, is just mind-blowing outside of, what, March, right? Who has a 0.61 ERA? And he's done it for 73 and a third innings with 73 appearances.
Unbelievable.
It is. He's looking at, he's on track to do something that four pitchers have done, and that's he'll become the fifth pitcher with an ERA of 0.75 or lower in 50 or more innings. He would join Zach Britton, Fernando Rodney, Dennis Eckersley, and Rob Murphy if he can just kind of finish things off this weekend, depending on if they use him or not. So I can't say enough about his season. I mean, he is such an integral part of the reason the Guardians and the postseason are being said with ease this year.
My favorite Emmanuel Clase stat.
Mm-hmm.
Guy throws, what, 103, 102, somewhere in there, right? Can max out to 104 every so often. So typically we all know how physics works, right? Object of motion stays in motion. Use that momentum. We heard it so many times. You know, hey, use that momentum that they give you. One of the lowest exit velocities in all of baseball is Emmanuel Clase.
Really?
For a guy that throws 102.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Bottom 10% in the league.
Two keys and a lock. You ready for the Browns and Raiders? We're going to give you two keys and a lock. Plus, Tim May is going to join us at 1 o'clock. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan.
It's going to be a tough test. They need a win. You need a win. Same exact records, 2-1 on both, or 1-2 on both sides. So Go get a win. That's it. That's all I can tell you. Just go get a win. Because if you bring this to 500, all of a sudden, you can look at the rest of the season in a completely different light and go, all right, the Andy Baskin line. We have 13 individual opportunities to find ourselves on the right side of the ledger.
Uncle, let's play Two Keys and a Lock. Andrew Hody was up all last night studying for Two Keys and a Lock. I watch him breaking down film. It was impressive. You can actually probably break down film with him on his, on your Twitch site probably too, right?
YouTube.
Oh, YouTube. That's where you break... Break down film with Hody, and then, of course, Dan Menigan is here as well. All right, let's play Two Keys and a Lock. Key number one, Dan Menigan.
Key number one in this game, run the damn ball. That's it.
That's a key.
Run the damn ball. That's all I'm saying. Like, I'd love to church it up. I would love to say it differently. Your offensive line is banged up. Your quarterback looks out of sync with his wide receivers. Your offensive line is a little hurting, and your running backs are the two guys who could definitely help you out. Vegas, not exactly ideal against the run on top of it. There's some level of success that you can have on the ground against Vegas. Just run the damn ball. That's key number one.
Andrew Hody, do you have a key number one?
Key number one for me is actually on the defense. They got to stop some of this short passing game. Daniel Jones torched them in the short passing range. 7-8 yard plays. I want to see the defense slow that down a little bit. I think they can. I think Jim Schwartz is going to work on that this week.
Key number one for me is, I was going to say 21, but now I'm going to jump it up to 24. 24 points. If the Browns can get to 24 points, I feel like they'll win this. You look at the last three games. Yeah, they scored 26 to beat Baltimore, but to me that game was a little bit fluky. So 22 and 10 are their other games. So 23 is a victory for me. Let's get into the end zone at least three times. That's what I say for the Browns. Key number two, Dan Menigan.
Key number two for this game is, look, you got to be better on third down. I'm sorry. You are a league worst 8 for 43 on third down, 18.6%. The league average is 37%. On third down, converting into first down. You have got to be better on third down. 13.1% of the Browns' offensive plays of 10 yards or more, that is the lowest rate in football. You need to be better on third down, and you have got to find some kind of explosive play along the way. Key number two, extend drives. Please extend drives. Get some first downs. Help your defense rest a little bit. That's key number two.
Key number two, Andrew Hote.
Third down conversions. They need to get those third down conversions going. They've been struggling with it all season long so far, especially last week. I think that's going to be a key for this game. And if they win that battle, they should win this game based on how the Raiders look against Carolina.
Key number two for me is 00 Ogbo Okoronkwo. Man, did he have an impressive sack last week. And the reason he becomes a key is if Myles Garrett is on a limited snap count, and we're concerned about his feet, we're concerned about his Achilles, we're concerned about his thigh. 00 is the man, and I can't tell you my teams. I think he would start across the league if he was playing for them. So 00 stepping up for Myles Garrett if for some reason Myles is on an unbelievable snap count. So 00 is key number two. Ready, ready, ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Turn the lock and throw away the key, because here comes the lock. Sock it to me, Dan Menigan.
The lock of this game, Gardner Minshew's throwing you two picks, and he might throw like four of them. He might throw about four or five balls that you can easily pick as well. I got a feeling we're going to have a lot of moments in this game where we're all going, on balls that should have been caught by Grant Delpit, Martin Emerson, Rodney McLeod, any of those guys who are involved there, Denzel Ward as well. I have a feeling this is going to be a defensive brawl, and you are going to see the Browns defense really, really show up in this one and really help the offense out with some good field position. My lock, two picks, Gardner Minshew.
I hate you. Andrew Hody.
Love you too, bud.
You'll find out one. Hody, what's your lock?
My lock actually is going to be very simple. The Browns find a way to win this game. I think everything we saw from the Raiders last year.
That's not a lock.
I think they're going to win this game
easily. Tell me something that's going to make them win the game. That's a lock.
Defense gets two turnovers. And not necessarily Gardner Minshew picks. A fumble. I could see Miles having a really big day on Sunday.
Teacher, he's copying my test.
I am not copying his test.
Can I get my
seat moved? I'm not copying his test. I think we could see a forced fumble from Myles Garrett this week. I'm really excited to see what the defense does there, but I think the Browns are going to have a field day in Vegas.
You should take your test in the hall.
Do you know where the principal's office is? Oh, you do, don't you?
It's all in Las Vegas.
Test in the hall. Cam sitting around the rest of the kids.
Okay, I hate you because why did I write that down before we started this segment?
He put two picks down and has a line under it under Gardner Minshew. I apologize for such things. Do you want me to change?
No, I'll change mine. I'm just wondering. I'll say this.
Other things.
All right, so here I'll lock in on this. Would you say how many turnovers did he say they would have?
He said two. Two seems to be the magic number.
I'll go with three. I'll say that.
Oh, I like it.
The Raiders will have three turnovers in this game. Now the question is are the Browns going to be able to turn those into points? So I'll go with three turnovers for the Raiders in this game, because I'm a slam dunk that we're at two picks on that. Minshew's going to force something, but he's got the ability to score points against the Browns, and that scares me because I go back to that game last year. I know Indianapolis is better than the Raiders are, but I mean, he had a great game against the Browns last year.
He played well.
It was a one-point game. Browns won 39-38.
Which, by the way, how in the hell did a P.J. Walker-led team score 38 points?
And he only threw for 178 yards in that game.
I mean, the defense was,
Yeah, it's the defense. I mean, that's what's going to be. It's all about the defense. And they're going to have to win with defense. I'm sorry. I am not trying to be negative about the Browns this week. I'm really not. I don't have any faith right now. What I've seen for 3 weeks right now doesn't give me a whole lot of faith. They didn't play great in that Jacksonville game. I think the only thing I'm kind of hanging my hat on right now was their ability to kind of spark up in the fourth quarter last week, where they had a couple of opportunities to try to drive the ball late. They didn't do it. I'm totally just bummed out about that loss against the Giants. I need them to kick off. Mm-hmm. Then I got to sit through all the 1 o'clock games to get to 4:25 is kick on Sunday?
4:25 kick.
So now it gets even worse. I mean, I'd sit through the Thursday night game last night. At least
I got done it to begin with.
Although we get a double dose of Siciliano, so that's good. That makes me happy. So
that's a win.
You've got Siciliano calling the Ohio State Michigan game. Michigan State, sorry. Game on Saturday night, and then you'll have the Browns right here on the Browns Radio Network with Siciliano. So that makes me happy. But I can't be alone in not having, like, I don't have this ultimate faith in the Browns offense to be able to put points on the board. I don't. And just why? Go back and look at the scores from the last three games. You tell me why I should have faith in the offense. Suddenly putting it together with no David Njoku. You're still missing both your tackles. I'm not there. I'm not there. I need them to put me there. And I think a lot of the folks that I've talked to this week feel exactly the same way.
Yes.
Speaking of Ohio State, Tim May, Letterman Row, Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan. Next.